Not all meals are created equal. For instance, breakfast has the spicy egg McMuffin for a limited time, and lunch doesn't. McDonald's breakfast comes first. Ba-da-ba-ba-ba.
I'm John Batchelor with Daniel Clowe, the author. The author of the new book on koalas, highly recommend. And we're not speaking of the tragedy in koalas. Daniel has taught me that koalas have their own hospital system. They're extremely vulnerable to fires because they cling to their eucalyptus trees, and that is extremely dangerous, but that is nature. Koalas have been there tens of millions of years, so they're survivors. People, a couple hundred years, we'll see. Daniel, we come to El Nino. It's upon you. Your metropolitan Weather Bureau waited a long time to declare it, but it has now declared. What that means is hot and dry. And I've been following your weather throughout Australia. You've had a lot of heat and a lot of dry air early. Does this look to be a dangerous fire season or just ordinary?
Look, fire season, I regard all fire seasons as dangerous. You never know when one's going to hit. We had a fire 2 years ago that burnt through our neighbourhood and burnt right along the edge of my properties. And that was not a bad season, and it was not a high-risk day. Unfortunately, that was an arsonist who did a very good job of setting fire to the park below my house. So these things can happen at any time under the strangest conditions. However, you know, the dry conditions and the hot summers combined with a high fuel load from previous wet years does make for dangerous conditions in many areas. And we know that with climate change, the incidence and frequency and severity of fires is increasing rapidly. So we are now seeing far more fires than we have in the past. And that just increases everybody's risk. So yes, we are looking at a scenario of increased fire risk for across most of the country.
And the fires, the question here in California, for example, in a couple of fires that have been very, very damaging, a lot of loss of life. And the question in Hawaii recently with the Maui fire, do you build too close to the fire fuel? In other words, is the civilization's need to spread out, is that part of the problem?
Yeah, well, I mean, that's a difficult question, isn't it? I mean, I love living in bushland areas. I love the native vegetation. And so I do want to live in a country area. But it does come with risks. Those risks are rare. They're even with the increased fire risk, it's still a rare event. So I think we just need to learn how to live safely if we're going to live in those areas. And the real risk comes from not so much from rural communities that have lived with these risks for a long time. It's often more of a problem in urban interface areas, so people moving into the foothills, you know, bushy areas surrounding cities on the outskirts of cities. So we have high population, low preparedness for fires, low experience of fires. Often people who don't live in the area, they work in town, but live, you know, they live in the area, but they work in the city. So those things all increase the risk. And so we really need to look at ways of helping people prepare better. I think it's just a matter of recognizing that you live in a fire zone and you have to be prepared.
Not all fires are the same, I'm learning. Yeah. It's all a matter of degree, but it's a judgment call. Is that how it works?
Yeah, look, there's fires burning across Australia pretty much all the time. So, you know, in the north and the west, we have fires burning all the time. Australia is a very fire-prone country. We just get upset about it when it happens close to people and where people live. And also in forests, it depends. If it's a big park, Australia tends to let those fires just take their course, rather than in America where they had a policy of, you know, complete fire suppression, which long-term actually increases your risk because it makes the fires worse when they do get out of control. We also have a policy of preventative burnings. So we actually burn a lot of our forests intentionally as a preparation, so to reduce the fuel load. This is something we did learn from Indigenous Australians, but we don't apply it very well. So it's a very delicate process that needs to be done on a small scale and a lot, which takes with a attention to the local ecology and fire prone factors rather than broad scale burning. So there's a lot of complicating factors in there. But it's a difficult question, and everything is different in different places.
Danielle Claude, A Future in Flames. I'm John Batch.
You're listening to CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.
You're great at protecting your own personal information. You probably even use things like two-factor authentication, strong passwords, and a VPN. But as much as you try to be in control of how your information is protected, there are lots of places that also have it, and they might not be as careful as you are. That's why LifeLock monitors millions of data points every second for identity threats. If your identity is stolen, a LifeLock U.S.-based restoration specialist will help solve identity theft issues on your behalf, guaranteed or your money back. Plus, all LifeLock plans are backed by the $1 Million Protection Package, meaning LifeLock will reimburse you up to the limits of your plan if you lose money due to identity theft. You might not be able to control how others handle your personal information, but you can help protect it with LifeLock. Save up to 40% your first year. Call 1-800-LIFELOCK and use promo code IHEART, or go to LifeLock.com/iHeart for 40% off. Terms apply.